The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, October 29th, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with our special guest making return visits, Steve Switkiewicz, Swit as we call him, and Frank Kolochny. My partner Jim Chesko is taking care of some family school business, and he'll be back next week, but welcome, fellas. Glad to have you back.
Hey, great to be back, Bill. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you. All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about, so we'll get this thing started. We're going to start off by putting our trivia question out there and thank Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown. We'll again be giving away an autographed 8x10 photo this week. It will be a black and white photo, signed by Eagles linebacker greats John Bunning and Bill Berge, to the first person that can call in and answer our Eagles trivia question. So here you go. We're going to put it out there for the listeners bright and early here, and then we'll put it out again if we don't get any answers. So we'll start it out, and here it is. In the top 10 in Eagles history in points scored in a season, okay? Eagles history, points scored in a season, there are 9 kickers and me at number 7 because I scored 20 touchdowns in one season. Who am I? Okay, so here it is again. In the top 10 in Eagles history in points scored in a season, there are 9 kickers and me. I am at number 7 because I scored 20 touchdowns in one season. Okay, our shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to give us a call throughout the show. This is the same number, 929-477-2855, to call to answer the trivia question and win the signed 8x10 photo of Bill Berge and John Bunning, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Okay, guys, want to talk Eagles first, and got a whole handful of things to talk about. But before we get into the details of the game and all that, Frank, I want to start out with you, and I just want to ask you what you thought about the penalty situation. To me, the game, the first half especially, but a good part of the game was it was almost hard to watch. There were so many penalties. What was your thinking?
I actually think we were back and forth with this topic on Facebook as the game was progressing. You know, you have Walt Anderson and his crew who are, I believe, the second top crew in the NFL currently right now with throwing the hanky on the carpet there. And, you know, they were one flag away from a record in the first quarter of that game. I mean, they are known, as they mentioned in the broadcast, about hands to the face. You can graze it. You can get caught in there, and they're going to call it. And they made a name for themselves the other day, I'm sure. And you're right, it was tough to watch. I mean, I don't know, you know, you ever coached a game or played a game, and you get into that, and it just kind of takes everything out of rhythm, and it kind of stops the game to a standstill. It has effect on both teams, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't say that it was one-sided. It was bad both ways. And you know, one call that kind of stuck out to me was the roughing the passer actually against the Cardinals, where the guy, you know, he kind of maybe bumped Foles there at the end over by the sideline, and the ref was standing behind him and saw Foles, you know, fall down, threw a flag. My goodness, it wouldn't have been a flag in flag football.
Yeah, I actually went off on that call. I was the first one to. You know, that was right after it was a possession after they called it on us, and you know, I don't ever want to use that term, a makeup call, but that was just blatantly that was blatantly poor. Even Mike Herrera, who does a lot of the stuff in the booth, reviewing a lot of the officiating, he even mentioned that.
Yeah. And Swift, did you get a chance to see that? One of the things I wanted to throw at you guys is I thought that the second half was a little bit different, a little better, and I said to my buddy as we were sitting there watching, I said exactly that, and lo and behold, the very next two plays, they threw two flags on both of those plays. But overall, the second half I thought went a little quicker because, you know, my buddy pointed out, you know, if they get too late, they're going to run into the World Series. Somebody had to have a talk with somebody at halftime and said, knock it off.
Yeah, Bill, you're right. As far as the penalties go, you know, as Frank said, you know, Walt Anderson is known, his crew is known for calling hands to the face. So going into it, I think that's one thing where the coaching staff has to pull the guys aside and say, all right, we have to be extra careful, keep the hands down, and because this crew is known for doing that kind of stuff and calling that kind of stuff. But did they go overboard? Absolutely. On a lot of these roughing the passer penalties, as brutal as that broadcast team was of Chris Myers and Rondé Barber, Rondé actually made some pretty good points about the roughing the passer, about how they were borderline at best, and I think he was being, you know, very favorable toward the referees and generous by calling them borderline. But, you know, you can't have a refereeing crew, officiating crew taking over the game like that. It just takes away from the enjoyment of the game. But, again, going back, a coaching staff has to do their research on the officiating crews and be able to tell the guys that here's what we can't get away with this week, and let's be extra cautious.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too. And I guess, interestingly enough, Jason Peters was one that had an awful rough day on the penalty standpoint. I believe he had 35 yards himself in penalties.
Well, he's had a tremendous year. You know, when you get the – in my opinion, he's the best left tackle in football. And I don't think too many people can debate that. But, you know – I think there was one questionable call on those three that he was flagged with, but you know, it's just one of them games. It really didn't hurt them in the flow of the game, though. I mean, realistically, if you look at the game of football, you could have holding calls on every single play.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But I think to your point, I think the flow of the game in the first half and the just trying to get anything going for either team was just so disruptive. It just was. It was seemed like the game, the half was never going to end, and it was boring. It was hard to watch. So
I can tell you for a fact that the fact was mentioned about somebody making a call down to that field. I can tell you for a fact that once the announcers started piling on, and I'm sure there was calls flowing in, somebody made a call down there in halftime, and that was definitely relayed to that team, I guarantee you, to that crew chief.
I think you're right. And like you say, more important than the game, possibly, was the fact that the World Series on Fox was coming up, and it better not be late, you know, from a TV standpoint. Because we know who's running the show, right, when it's all said and done. Well Frank, let's talk and go about the game just a little bit. I wanted to throw out there, because I know you have some solid opinions on this, the pass rush going on with the Cardinals and Nick Foles, you know, spending a lot of time backpedaling, not setting his feet, kind of throwing the ball over the place, making some bad decisions. And what was your take on all that? I thought the Cardinals did a pretty decent job, although they gave up, you know, over 500 yards. They kept pressure on Foles all day.
Yeah,
they kept
I'm
sorry,
go ahead,
was that
Frank.
Me or
Swift? No, go ahead, Frank.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, what I was going to say about Foles, I mean, you saw kind of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of game from him. I mean, you cannot – the pass he threw to Macklin, the 54-yard touchdown pass, I don't think you're going to see a better thrown ball in the NFL. Any quarterback in the NFL is going to throw a pass as good as that. Then on the other hand, then you have the two really bad interceptions. And as you guys said, the pedaling, the happy feet in the pocket, you know, this guy shows flashes of greatness, and I don't use that word lightly, with that touchdown pass, but then in the same token, he goes back and he looks like a rookie quarterback with some of the mistakes he's making. So, you know, as far as he went, you know, 62 attempts, 36 completed, you know, that's way too many pass attempts that they went with. So some of that's got to go on the play calling, but you know, again, not a great game for Foles, but not a bad game for him.
Frank, what was your take?
I'm not gonna debate the play calling, because frankly, you know, they were one of the best teams against the run. I think McCoy alone ran for 82 yards or something like that. So they had pretty good success. I think Seattle was the only other team that ran more than them against the Cardinals, I believe, if I'm my recollection is right.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
But what we have to go back to is, you have to remember, let's keep this in mind, that this kid is only a year and a quarter into this program. Okay, so he's still a young quarterback. He is growing. Fundamentally, he's unsound right now. And I, quite frankly, I get a little bit perturbed when I watch the press conference post-game, when I hear, well, I'm going to learn from it. You know, I'm going to go back, I'm going to look at the film. I'm going to go back and you know, chuck it up as a learning experience for me. I'm going to put that feather in my hat and I'm going to learn from it. Well, I'm getting kind of tired of hearing that you can't throw off your back foot and you're going to make the adjustments. I'm getting tired. That's a fundamental mistake that he's lacking. Let's get another subject topic here, and that is the number of passes that were attempted, 62. I think he completed 36, which I think tied a record for an Eagles quarterback. However, we also have to be cognizant of the fact that this quarterback is not the kind of quarterback that can win you games throwing 62 times. It doesn't happen with this guy. He's not in the elite. I've seen it done with Rodgers. I've seen it done with Breeze. I don't even remember Manning throwing for 60-some times. But I can tell you what, he's not in that elite factor right now, and you cannot give him that kind of pressure to put on his shoulders. If you're going to throw to the game 62 times and you're going to win it for us, it's beyond him.
Well, I think one thing I think, though, that might be a little bit misleading that I haven't heard a lot of talk about since the game, is the Eagles ran 88 plays from scrimmage. So, you know, that in itself was really high. So they, you know, as you say, they did throw 62 times, but they also ran 26 times, which is not really a bad number. So the 26 rushes isn't bad. And then they actually put their first long drive of the season, probably the longest drive of the Kelly era, seven minute and 5 seconds, 78 yard, 13 play drive together. So they did actually move the ball a little bit. But like I say, the 62 is definitely too many. But when you think about that, you ran 88 plays from scrimmage, maybe the 62 isn't quite as out of whack as it sounds. You know, usually if you're going to throw that many times, you ran the ball 10. You know what I mean?
And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm really surprised at the rushing success they had against that Cardinal defense. They were coming in highly touted. And I don't know what the rank was, but they were up there against the run defense. And McCoy, you know, he had, 83 yards and 21 carries. Now, granted, not a great game, but certainly a much better game than I think anybody would have thought. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I believe they were number three against the rush coming in, I believe.
Yeah, number three. I knew they were up top there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, my other comment regarding Nick Foles and the passing situation is, and I said this before the season even started, so this isn't new news coming from me, but, you know, looking at last season and the success he had and the things they did offensively, and Frank, I know from coaching, you know this certainly, is how do you stop that stuff? You rush the quarterback. You send more people than they can block, and that's a lot of what the Cardinals did, and Foles didn't take any sacks, and he hasn't taken many sacks all season. He's throwing the ball away, but in turn, I mean, he's getting pressure each week, And that's where I'm a little surprised that the Eagles aren't using a little more of a dump game, little screen game, swing game. You know, and obviously they could do that probably a little better with Sproles in there. But there's no reason they can't do it with Polk and McCoy as well. But, you know, how do you get the quarterback out of the rhythm, and especially a young guy who's still learning defenses and all that? Rush him, rush him, rush him. And that's what teams are doing. The Giants didn't do it, and by gosh, they got shredded. But I think the teams that are having success and the teams that are good defenses to begin with, that's the key, is just, and that's what they're doing, is just keep rushing him.
I think Arizona, if I remember correctly, was blitzing 47% of the time coming into that game. I don't know about a lot of other people, but when I do review on the tape of probably every game when I watch it, I know one thing that I've seen before, and I only really got into breaking this part of the game down after I had listened to Jaws a couple times when he was referencing some stuff, but there's so much underneath stuff that he's missing right now, whether it's thrown behind his tight ends, or he's not seeing them slants come right away when the linebackers drop out. You know, and even if they're up 8 in the box, that he's just missing these little quick under routes that right now is just causing him a lot of problems, because he's inefficient when it comes to his number two, because he panics, and there he goes again, throwing off his back foot.
Right. Well, and I had to be impressed from you know, not because it was against the Eagles. I wasn't impressed with that. But, you know, when it got down to the end there, Todd Bowles, I was impressed with what he did. He kept sending the house. None of this rush three, drop eight nonsense that gets everybody killed. He kept bringing them all the way up to the last play when he sent, shoot, I don't know how many ended up being, 6, 7, or 8, sending as many as he could and putting pressure on. That's the key. Swit, what did you think about the overall about the defense? Obviously, the last play of the game was a botch that ended up costing the big touchdown. But defensively, overall, what did you think?
Yeah, I give them a solid grade there. I mean, even though they got beaten on the long touchdown pass there at the end, and there's absolutely no excuse for that. I mean, first of all, I don't know how you let a guy. But like John Brown, like a fast guy like that, get by it. Now, I mean, obviously a blown coverage, but, you know, you take away that one and you take away the 80-yard touchdown pass to Fitzgerald, and they play a real solid game. Now, there was some debate, I guess, on the Fitzgerald touchdown where Kelly was arguing for a pick play. So, you know, obviously you can't take that one, you know, make an excuse there. But I thought they played a pretty good game, all things considered. But the problem remains in the secondary with the corners and Nate Allen and, you know, off topic a little bit with the deadline passing. I'm surprised they didn't go out there and shore up the secondary. The Buccaneers are trying to unload pretty much everybody, and they got rid of their former number one pick, selected pretty high, Mark Barron. I mean, that would have been an ideal guy for the Eagles secondary, and I believe the Bucs only got a fourth and a sixth round pick, and certainly for a guy of that caliber, I would have certainly, you know, if I was the Eagles, that brought him in for that price. But no, I thought they played pretty well again, except for those two plays, and you know, I think this defense has shown, you know, a measurable improvement over the weeks, and I think they're only going to get better.
Frank, what do you think about the defense?
I think the defense played great. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, they didn't drop the quarterback at all, and that's really not really that big of an issue in that game, because really they kept them off the board. I mean, they really did a good solid job, and you know, the Nate Allen situation has become redundant at this point. I mean, this has been going on for a couple of years now. It just didn't happen this year. You know, everybody praised him about making strides coming into this year and what have you. You know, I mean, he's Patrick Chung all over again. It's that simple. I mean, you know what? In that play that he got beat on, and you see it all the time. Anytime you see a receiver being chased, all you see is 29 chasing him. Every single big play, it's him, because he's not getting over top of. He does it all the time with his help. Okay, you can see Kerry Williams. Kerry Williams looks like him, like, where were you? Okay, I mean, you know, you got to remember that these defensive backs, that play in particular, they're playing deep quarters, which you have, you split that field in quarter increments, and his position on that is supposed to be deepest than the deepest. He is, there's nobody, his heels should have been on the 30. There was no way anybody should have been behind him at all. There's no excuse for that play, and there's nobody going to defend him, including himself. He came out, said it was his bad, and it was his bad. But it cost you a big game, a very big game.
And, Frank, one thing, too, and this guy, I think he's flying a little under the radar, not getting a whole lot of criticism, and that is Earl Wolf. I mean, this guy had a golden opportunity to come in and grab that starting safety position, and I think some of it's injuries. He got banged up again on special teams on Sunday, but he's really regressed. He has a chance to take over the starting safety position, and if you can't beat out Nate Allen, I mean, I don't think you belong in the National Football League.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
they're carrying all these defensive backs back there, and you know, quite frankly, the bottom line is if that guy goes down, you got to have somebody in there, and you know, like it or not, he's the best that's available right now. But he hasn't made any progress because of his injuries. He can't stay healthy to stay on the field. Up was that way at the beginning of the year, you know, and quite frankly, you're seeing it across the NFL this year. Bill and I had mentioned this before on one of our other topics that we were here on a show ago, and I had mentioned where I cannot remember in my lifetime the amount of injuries that we're seeing across the board here in the NFL.
We talked
about that a couple weeks ago, and I totally agree. This year more so than ever. I mean, you see big name players going down, I mean, with season ending injuries. I've never seen in my lifetime this many injuries. You're absolutely right.
Yep. And they're serious injuries too, a lot of them. Well Frank, we can't get off the Eagles without talking about this. I want to start with you, and Swit, I want to get you involved as well, but I got to get your opinion on the third down shotgun from the one.
Well, I guess I'm in the minority because at my point in time right now, when I'm looking at Tobin up there, I'm looking at Mulk. Right now, my opinion is, you know, I thought it was a good decision just for the simple reason, you know, you're in a shotgun, you're 6 yards away. He's getting that ball 4 yards deep instead of under the center and taking a quarterback sneak shot there. However, you're taking, you know, you're laying it all on the defense. You're saying, you know what, guys, here, we got 3 points here. We got 2 minutes left. It's up to you to stop them. I got confidence in you. I want to see you do your job. You've been playing great. I think it was a good call. I don't take points off the board there. You know, the bottom line is your defense and that chucklehead should have been where all you got to do is knock that ball down and the game's over. It's that simple. I have no problem with the call personally.
Well, I am going to tell you, we'll get to Swit, but I'm going to tell you, you absolutely have surprised me, Frank. Swit, go ahead.
Well, on the third down, going to the third down, no reason for being in the shotgun, in my opinion. I think, you know, hey, we all know Foles isn't the most mobile of quarterbacks, but, I mean, if you can't fall ahead to get, what, 3 inches for the first and maybe a yard for the touchdown, I mean, come on. I mean, you just got to fall forward. That's the play I would have ran. No shotgun. On the decision to kick the field goal, I'm with Frank. I think you take the points. There are too many things that could happen on fourth down. You go for it on fourth down, you get stopped. You're taking a chip shot field goal 3 points off the board. You kick the field goal, which they did, and you make Carson Palmer beat you. And, hey, give him credit. He did with a breakdown on the defense. But no problem on the decision to kick the field goal. I do have a major problem with the third down call, however.
Let me make a real quick point here because – I don't recall hearing this anywhere, which is kind of my beef about things. A couple weeks ago, I believe it was week two, Chip goes out and he hires this guy to come in and monitor all the replays that are coming in. He actually has a guy on his staff that's in the booth that's replaying these things, and he's radioed down to him. That's his job. Do we make the flag? Do we throw the flag? Do we challenge this? Don't we challenge it? How the heck do you not see that Chris Polk run to where he may not have got a touchdown on that, but I guarantee you he was pretty damn close to a first down on that thing, if not in the end zone. I think right there was a big blunder on not challenging that at that point in the game.
Absolutely. And that I was going to get to that next, but I'm glad you brought it up. I agree 100%. Yes, they did hire a guy, and that is his job. But, you know, Chip is saying that the information he got was not conclusive enough, or didn't think it was conclusive enough to do it. And I'm thinking, you know what, you can't take challenges and timeouts home with you. You don't get any credit for that. Go ahead and use it, and then in about another, I forget the exact time, but about another minute and 20 or whatever it was, you were going to hit the two-minute warning, and everything would have been reviewed for you after that anyway. So why not go ahead and use it? I fully agree with you. I think that whole situation down there at the goal line and in the red zone was a problem for me. And, again, I'm with you guys. I have no problem with kicking the field goal. You absolutely have to take the points. But the third down play, I can no reason to be in a shotgun that I can see. Just that's like giving yourself a 5-yard penalty, especially against a defense that you know is coming after you hard. I think you got to be up under the center on that. So,
you know what else gets me? I'll tell you something else that got me on that subject too was you got the number one rusher in football last year sitting back there. Possible MVP candidate. Why the hell is he not in the game for that one run? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And you know, it almost seems like every one or two carries, he comes out. You know, he doesn't seem to stay in for a whole series, and I don't know if he's taking himself out or if they have a rotation going or exactly how that's working.
From what I understand, from what I'm hearing, it's And Chip has laid this on Deuce Staley, where he doesn't change the plays for whoever the running back is. He doesn't get into who comes in, who comes out. That's on Staley. Staley picks and chooses who comes in, who does. You know, sometimes you get too cute for your own good. And I never heard that mentioned all week, but I got a real issue with that. I mean, you know, tough it up, get in there. You haven't run the ball that much. You're not that exhausted. Get the heck in there and pound it in.
I'm with you. And, you know, that to your point, if that is indeed right with Staley, you know, it comes back to that plug-and-play mentality that Kelly has. I don't buy that plug-and-play thing. You know, you can't just take players and put them in spots and expect greatness out of them. Obviously, you're seeing it on the offensive line. You just can't just say, okay, this guy's on my roster, and all of a sudden he's going to be as good as Jason Peters is up front or as good as LeSean McCoy is in the backfield. Just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I think too. I mean, especially with Sproles being out last week, I think you got to give Chris Polk more than three touches, more than three carries. I mean, you know, you run the ball a little bit more. Again, we talked about the Cardinals defense. They were third ranked and all, but, you know, give Polk a couple more shots there. Give Shady a little bit of a break if he needs a break, and I agree with you. I mean, he shouldn't have to need a break every couple of plays, but if he does, you know, hey, you got Polk. They like this Chris Polk. Give him a shot.
Yeah, well, and, you know, Shady's always been the one, just like all the other great backs. They say the more we carry, the better we get. Well, you're not really getting all that many carries right now. Maybe because they're not as successful carries as they used to be. Maybe that's the problem. All right, well, let's move on. I want to thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Okay, well, we still don't have any callers for our trivia question, so we'll go ahead and we'll put it out here again, and we'll see if we can give away our autographed picture. We're giving away a Bill Berge, John Bunning autograph, black and white, 8x10, courtesy of Carl's Cards. Here's your question. In the top 10 in Eagles history in points scored in a season, there are 9 kickers and me at number 7 because I scored 20 touchdowns in one season. Who am I? Just a reminder, the www.shopforkisses.org phone lines are open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to give us a call. This is also the same number to call to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. All opinions are welcome. Please be respectful of other people's opinions. All right, fellas. Eagles are headed to Texas this week. They're playing the Texans, who have actually won 4 games this year under new coach Bill O'Brien. What do you see, guys, leading into this? J.J. Watt is on the horizon for the Eagles.
Frank, you want to start out, Frank?
Yeah, you got Clowney back. He's going to have his second game back. I think he's going to be full tilt going this week. Not too sure about their linebacker. Was it Pushing? Not too sure if he's back this week. But you know what? Say what you want. But I'll tell you what. This guy, J.J. Watt. This guy's got to be. He's got to be in the running for the MVP in my opinion right now. Let alone defensive player of the year. I mean, this guy's just playing lights out right now. This guy's got a motor like I haven't seen in quite some time. And you know what the great thing about this kid is? He gets it. He gets it. You know, people ask him, I've seen different interviews, whether it's Dan Patrick or whoever it may be, about, you know, his on-the-field persona or off-the-field persona. And the guy, you know, they're all asking, you know, how come you don't have a girlfriend? How come you don't go out with the team and you don't do this? And his exact opinion on this is, right now, my job is an NFL football player. I'll have time for that when I'm done. But right now, my job is to be the best professional football player that I can be because that's what I'm paid to do, and I do it in a respectful manner. I mean, when do you ever hear this anymore? The guy's a class act.
It sounds like a dinosaur talking, doesn't it?
Oh, it's just unbelievable. But, you know, back to the point about where do I see this. I see this as a good game for the Eagles. I see it as a good matchup. I'm not too worried about Fitzpatrick back there. I think the Eagles are going to win this game for the simple reason that I do not see them outscoring the Eagles. And I'm thinking maybe 30-17 this week.
Mm-hmm. Swick, what do you think?
Well, I have a kind of a different take on this game here. I think everybody says must win and crossroads game. I think this is without a doubt a crossroads game for the Eagles this week. If you look at their schedule, they got Carolina coming up next week and at Green Bay the following. There is no way they can lose this game. If they lose this game, you might be looking at a 4-game losing streak with those other two teams on deck. That said, I'm in the same camp with Frank. I don't think they will lose this game. I'll just echo every point that Frank made on J.J. Watt. And the only other thing I wanted to touch on, and maybe you guys could chime in on this then, is in college he wasn't even a defensive player. I believe he was a tight end in college. And he converted, I think it was a senior year, he converted to defensive side of the ball. But
I believe he was from Central Michigan, isn't he? I think he is.
Right. Right, and then he transferred, I believe it was to Wisconsin. But, you know, he's just an amazing athlete. And if you had Clowney back next week, like Frank said, that's going to really pose some problems for the Eagles' offensive line, especially if Harriman gives it a go. He's going to be playing with one arm, essentially. So that could cause a problem. But looking at the Houston offense, Arian Foster had a big game last week. So, I mean, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns on 20 carries. Big game for him. But if you look at their wide receivers, I mean, with the exception of Andre Johnson, you're looking at DeAndre Hopkins, who's decent, and then their third-string receiver, and we know him well, is DeMarvis Johnson. I mean, so they're not real solid in the receiving game. In fact, last week they only had they only had three receivers catching passes. The other catches were out of the backfield from the running backs. So I think Foster gets his. I think Andre Johnson will get his. But when it's all said and done, I think the Eagles win by double digits. I'm saying, somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 31 to 20, something like that. I think it'll be close in the early going, but I think they get the lead and then score late to kind of put a little breathing room in between them.
Well,
he's an anomaly for sure. I mean, when he was up at Central Michigan, I mean, you can recall back. He was very, very, very pissed at that organization because he had no direction out there at all. I mean, when they had him playing tight end, I mean, the guy caught like 8 passes for like 80 yards or something like that, 77 yards or something like that. And, upon his transfer to Wisconsin, he automatically was redshirted. And then he started all 13 games in 2009. He was unbelievable. And he just took off from there. And the guy's just he's a great player. I'll tell you what, I'd kill to have him. He's Reggie White all over again.
And, Frank, one other really cool story I heard about him, I think it was last year or maybe the season before, is that he does a lot of charity work in the Houston area. And he was on his way to see a young kid, and he actually stopped by a local sporting goods store to buy some J.J. Watt memorabilia, some jerseys and some footballs, because he didn't even know that the organization, that the team would provide that for him. He went out there and bought it out of his own pocket to take to present to the kid he was giving it to. So I thought that was a pretty cool story.
I
heard that also.
Well, the thing that I'm going to find interesting this week, if you look at the Texans, they're 4-4. They're only a game behind Indianapolis in that AFC South. But the games they won, the Redskins, the Raiders, the Bills, and the Titans, all games that they probably should have won. Then they lost to the Giants, the Cowboys, the Colts, and the Steelers, all games probably they should have lost, except for the Giants. Who knows where they are at this point? But so they're 4-4, probably right in the middle of the pack where they should be. But I think what's going to be challenging for the Eagles is right now with Arian Foster in there with 766 yards rushing already in the season. He's a great back, and they're ranked 5th in the league in rushing. So I think that's a challenge for the Eagles defense. We'll see how they do, and I'm sure they're going to load up to stop him and try to put the game on Ryan Fitzpatrick's back, which. The more he has to throw the ball, the better I like our chances at this point. But I'm with you guys. I'm liking the Eagles pretty handily in this game. So I think we should be able to do pretty much anything we want on the offensive side of the ball. So got to keep Watt and Clowney away from the quarterback. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple from a defensive standpoint from the Eagles side is, you load up the box, you put 8 in the box, stop Foster. And, like you said, Andre Johnson might get his. But, you got to absolutely right, Billy. You got to let Fitzpatrick beat you. And I don't think he's capable of doing that. I think this is definitely an Eagle victory. I don't see it any other way.
I am with you. All right, well, let's talk about the Flyers a little bit. Who'd have thought we'd want to talk Flyers at the end of October? But, they came out of the box slow. They were 0-4, but here they are 9 games later, and they've got 10 points. They're just 2 points behind the first-place Islanders, and they've bounced back well. They're playing pretty well. Ray Emery is now the hot goaltender. He's getting the work and doing a real good job. So are you surprised as we finish this month of a very hard schedule? They play Tampa tomorrow night. Then one more on the road in Florida, and then they're home for 4. But these first 10 games out of the chute with a bunch of tough teams on the road, Swit, I know you're a big hockey guy. Let's lead off with you.
Yeah, I'm real surprised. I mean, I looking at that schedule coming out of the gate. If you saw 2 wins, maybe 3 wins there, I mean that was being gracious. I mean, and they do have 2 overtime losses, shootout losses. But, Yeah, I mean, some pleasant surprise in that they're scoring goals this year. And last year, I think they started at 0-7. They weren't scoring. This year, they're getting five goals out of Michael Raffel, of all players, and tied for the team lead now with Wayne Simmons. And that's one guy that's really stepped up to the forefront. It's been a pleasant surprise. And then a surprise good and bad in the goaltending situation. And, you know, doing a little prep for the show tonight, I noticed that, which I wasn't aware of, that Wayne Emery has, Ray Emery has all of the wins, 4-0.
He does.
Mason has every loss. So who would ever thunk that? I mean, and hey, if Emery's a hot hand, keep riding him. But, you know, those are two of the major surprises in the early going. Now, you know, looking at the schedule, it gets progressively easier, I mean, if you will. And, you know, let's face it, we all know it's early in the season. But, you know, Tampa Bay at Tampa will be a tough one. But then you've got Florida, you're at Florida, and then you got Edmonton, Florida coming in. So, I mean, they have a chance to go on a little bit of a run here. And, I'm in the camp where, you know, the early games in the season are just as important at the end. You got to, you know, clean up on some of these teams or in the early going and don't make it so tough on yourself on the back end.
Absolutely. Frank, you've been paying much attention to the Flyers this early, or are you like my man Chet and you don't watch hockey till January?
Well, I started off a couple of weeks ago thinking that, but it's awful funny how winning cures all, right? on a three-game winning streak here, I mean, you know, you look down at what's happened with Emery. I mean, God, the guy's 4-0-1 already. And the most important part is he's garnered points in every single appearance. I mean, it's one of his best streaks right now that he's had in his career right now. And, you know, they started off tough. I mean, they had real bad defense. They had injuries. They had breakdowns. I mean, et cetera, just start this season. And say what you want, but it hurt Mason. It harmed his game. It really did. You know, I really got to believe that, you know, Berube's giving these guys every chance to win every night. And, I mean, they could win this month. They could end the month at 500, which a couple weeks ago you'd have thought it's impossible.
Right.
And one thing I'm surprised at, too, I mean, you know, he just had two of your key defensemen go down. Coburn's been out for a while. He had a setback. He's out for another 4 weeks. And Andrew McDonald's out for 4 weeks. And they had to call up my favorite Flyer in the organization. That's Shane Gostisbehere. I mean, this kid, 19 years old, I think 19, 20 years old, and he hasn't made a big mistake. It seems like he's fitting in well. And what a better nickname for right around Halloween is they call this guy the Ghost.
The Ghost, yeah. Yeah,
but
I tell you what I'm excited about right off the bat. I'm excited about the Voracek Giroux raffle line. Voracek with 13 points in 9 games, Giroux 11 points in 9 games, and as you mentioned, Raffel with his 5 goals. You know, if you can get a point a game, you know, that's and you become a number one line in the league, that sure puts pressure on everybody else. And And it lets the second and third line guys get better matchups, and I like it. I like the way these guys, Voracek and Giroux especially, they're all over the ice and playing real well.
Let's also keep in mind, I mean, Lecavalier, I mean, here's our big signing once again. Once he missed 6 games already, I mean, you know, and I don't even think, I doubt if he's going to play in Tampa. With that left foot, it's just brutal with this guy right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's only played in 3 games so far, but he also had 3 points in 3 games himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, one last thing on the Flyers I wanted to mention, too. They mentioned it on the broadcast last night, and Flyers coming off a nice win against Detroit on Saturday night. And Berube, they asked Berube who's going to give the team off on Sunday, and he said no. He said they pushed them hard on Sunday right after a big win against Detroit. They said it was a short but crisp practice, and you know, Berube was quoted, I'm paraphrasing, is that he doesn't want them to get complacent. He said, you know, don't think, you know, we accomplished anything here in the early going just because we had, a couple of big wins. He's kept keeping his foot on their necks here, so to speak, and, you know, worked them hard on Sunday. He said a short, crisp practice, and then they were out of there. But instead of giving the boys a day off, they were out there working.
All right. Well, listen, we got a couple callers here, so maybe we have an answer to our trivia question. We're gonna take the first one that called, of course, and let's see what we have. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, who do we have?
Hey, this is Danny Bevins.
Hey, Danny,
how
are you? Good.
I'm doing all right. How you fellas doing?
Well,
great,
Danny.
Welcome. Great.
Great
show,
man.
You
got
man.
An answer
great
for
show.
A trivia
I'm
question
it.
Tonight, buddy?
I, yes, sir, I do.
All right.
My
lay it on
us. Is, okay. My answer is Brian Westbrook.
That answer is incorrect.
Oh!
That answer
okay.
is incorrect, my friend.
Oh, darn. I thought I had it there.
Well, you know, Bill Berge looked like he was looking at you in that picture. I saw that, but that is not the correct answer.
I felt,
so.
I know. I felt the vibe. I mean, he was throwing it at me.
All right. Well, we appreciate the call. We're going to have to slide on to the next guy.
All right. I guess if he doesn't get it, do I get another shot?
Well, call back in and we'll see how it goes.
Okay, man. You guys take
right.
have a good one, man. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hello, who do we have?
This is Kevin. How are you doing?
Kevin, how are you? Welcome.
I'm doing great. I think I got the answer to the question.
Go ahead, lay it on us.
I'm going to go LeSean McCoy.
The answer is LeSean McCoy with 20 touchdowns in 2011.
Yep, I was thinking Westbrook for a while, too, but I thought I remembered that McCoy hit 20 a couple years ago. That was a big deal when he did it. So I thought I'd take a shot.
Yeah.
When he answered Westbrook, I figured I definitely had it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, and interestingly enough, Kevin, when I was putting that question together, it could have gone all the way to 15 guys, except there was one other guy in the top 15 that was a kicker but also was a player back in the day who had scored a couple touchdowns, so I didn't want to confuse it. So, but in the top 10, it was the only non-kicker was LeSean McCoy.
Yep. I guess hard to believe that Van Buren had that many touchdowns back. He had like 17, I think, in 1 year.
He did his in 10 games.
Right, yeah. Yep, so much
right.
different era. So.
All right. Well, Kevin, I think I have your information already, so we will send that photo out to you. It'll be about a week or two because Bill Berge will be signing at Carl's on November the 8th. So once Bill signs that picture, John Bunning's already signed it, we will be sending it to you.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin, appreciate the call.
Yep, take care. Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go, fellas. We got a winner. And, Frank, I know you and Kevin are buddies, and as well as I know Kevin well, and I'm not surprised that he would have the answer.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked a lot of people really didn't know that. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, if you're a true Eagles fan, you should have known that answer.
That was the easiest question I think we've put out so far, so we made it a little easier this time to get the winner, and but Brian Westbrook's a good, you know, he had a lot of good years, but I as Kevin mentioned, I do remember the big excitement about McCoy getting his 20th TD.
Oh yeah, they made a big stink about that here. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Frank, let's move on. Tonight's opening night for the 76ers, and I know you're a past season ticket holder. We've talked about that in the past, and I think you've seen the roster. It's probably the youngest and most unknown roster in sports history. The Vegas odds are over under 15.5 wins, and yes, they still play 82 games. Can they make that 15.5?
It's actually a very, very interesting number. And I'm going to tell you, I'm thinking 17 or 18, so I'm going to go over. I'm thinking 17 or 18. I'm not going any higher than 18, that's for sure.
Well, just remember now, they only won 19 last year, and they unloaded three starters.
Right. So I'm sticking with it. I'm staying with my staying with my prognostication, and I'm gonna stick with that number. I'm gonna
I'm going to stick with 17 right now.
And I think what's going to happen, the defense, handling the threes has to improve. I mean, they were brutal with that last year. Absolutely
mm-hmm.
brutal. But I'm going to tell you something. I think this kid McDaniels is really just going to – I think he's going to light it up this year so far as the fact that, I think he's going to have a better year than Noel, I'll be honest with you. I mean, the kid from Kentucky, he gets all the fanfare, and rightly so. He's coming in the league right now. I just don't see it right now. I think, for big men to come into this game so quickly and, really translate their games to the next level, it's harder on them. His offensive game is far from a finished product, right now. You throw the fact in that, he currently lacks the bulk right now to withstand that pounding that happens in the NBA right now. And, I just see that this KJ kid, I see the upside on him. I mean, the kid's like 6'6", 200, something like that. He's got premium
mm-hmm.
size to play. He got premium size to play the wing. He can run with the best of them. And here's what's interesting about this kid. He has a very, very rare contract going into this season. It gives him all incentive in the world to want to show really how an attractive player can be this year. I mean, he has nothing to lose. He really doesn't. And, I really see big things out of this kid. So we'll see what happens.
I hear you. Well, one of the interesting things about this roster, they've got 15 of the 15 guys on the roster. 8 of them are either rookies or were rookies last year. So that's half the roster has one or less years experience. But interestingly enough, you mentioned about McDaniels being 6'6". There is no one on this roster of 15 shorter than 6'6" tall, which that's a big basketball team. So, maybe the good thing is that they're really young, and the bad thing is that they're really young. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, you heard the talk, but, everybody keeps saying it's the worst roster ever assembled, but, we'll see.
Yeah. Sweet. What's your thoughts on the Sixers? Do you realize they still play basketball here in Philadelphia?
Yeah, this is gonna be funny. I mean, I have them over 15.5, and I'd be all over that if I was a betting guy, which I really am not. But I tell you what, I agree 100%. This is the ironic part. I have them at 17 wins. In fact, I was talking to a couple people, before the show today, and we were talking a little Sixers, and I said, they would win about 17 games, 17 right on the number. The thing I'm looking at the most from the Sixers. Is to play a Nerlens Noel. I want to see what this guy is going to bring to the table. From what I understand and from what I've witnessed, he's more of a shot blocker, rebounder type, has a minimal offensive game. But I hope I'm wrong, but, I mean, just look at him at face value. I kind of compare him to, I don't know if you guys remember this guy, Hashim Thabeet. He was the second overall pick in the – what was it, back in the 2009 draft, went to the Grizzlies. I mean, this guy's been in the D League, and now he's a marginal player now for Oklahoma City. So I hope I'm wrong on that front. But, you got to play offense in the league, and especially at his size. I mean, I'm really curious how this guy is going to transition to the NBA. I'm really, really interested in seeing how this is going to work out.
Yeah,
well,
another factor
you have to keep in mind, and where I set my number at regarding this was, let's face facts. The Eastern Conference, it's not like they're facing a load of talent. There's a lot of they're going to be playing against a lot of other subpar teams, and this team is a very, very young team, and I look for them to run, and. They're a long way away. I understand that, but I'm sticking with that number right now. I'm confident in that number.
I'm hoping you're right, Frank, because I want basketball to make a comeback. And, just because these guys are young doesn't mean they can't play. There's obviously a lot to learn in that league, but I'm hoping that they or at least they go out and compete and they do give us something to look forward to, and that the the plan is a good plan as it moves forward.
Well, you know, everybody will tell you, and you know, the gentleman who just called, Kevin, my friend Kevin, who called in, you know, I had my season tickets. I had season tickets for every team. The last ones that I unloaded were the Sixers. I had seats on the court directly across from the visitors' bench. I was directly next to Ed Snyder and down from Celebrity Row. And what hit me was, you know, the tickets were $1.95 a seat, had two of them. So you're looking at a $550, $575 night. You know, you're in the Lexus Club, you're having dinner, you got parking, you got all that stuff. And when I'm sitting down there and I'm watching these games and I'm looking around and I'm hearing people chirping up in the second level because there's 6,000 people in the stands, I basically looked around at that point and I just said, you know what? This product is poor. This product is inefficient. I'm done. Until they start showing me some kind of commitment on their end and where they're going directional-wise, I'm not going back. And I won't go back. I'm sticking to that. I did it before with the Phillies, and I'm doing it again here.
I'm with you. Hey, just before we move on, I wanted to throw out that I got a message from Danny, who just missed our trivia question. He just wants to let you know, Frank, and let all the listeners know that he is a true Eagles fan and has been for 45 years. So he didn't like your comment that a true Eagles fan would have got that question right, and that he is a true Eagles fan, and he just took a guess and he thought it was Brian Westbrook. So we'll clear the air and keep Danny going with us.
The comment was said in jest. It was just tongue-in-cheek. It was nothing intentional. So good
absolutely,
job.
Absolutely.
We appreciate the call-in. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Hey, it would have been easy to look it up and get it, right? Anybody could have done that. So we certainly appreciate the call and thank Danny for that. All right, another reminder of the upcoming signings in the Delaware Valley in the near future. As we mentioned, Carl's Cards will be having Eagles great Bill Berge, my favorite Eagle of all time, by the way, in the store on November 8th. He'll have our friend Ray Dittinger. He'll be in the store selling and signing his new Eagles encyclopedia on November 15th. That's a late afternoon signing between 3 and 5, so don't miss that. And if you listen to our show, Chet already met up with Ray, got the encyclopedia, has looked through it and said it is absolutely fantastic. And even, you know, updated over the last 8 or 10 years, he says is really, really good. So Carl's will also be having a private signing with the Big E, Eric Lindros. The deadline to get your items to Carl's store is November the 16th, so that's coming up pretty quick. And John LeClair will be in the store on December 13th. Carl does a great job getting guests in. We hope you can support his efforts. He has a Facebook page, a website, so please check him out. Get all the signing costs and details. And, you know, with Christmas coming up, these are some pretty good guests to get, make some pretty good Christmas presents for people. So hopefully you can support Carl's efforts. We'd like to thank Carl's Cards for his participation on the show. Our special guests, Steve Swickowitz and Frank Polachny, as well as Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, who will return next week, this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, November 5th at 7 p.m., and we talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.